for members only. Golf Smarter number 196 for September 15, 2009.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Win a teaching round with Adam Eisner, head teaching professional.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and can you please give me some advice on how to catch up from a working vacation on the opposite side of the planet? Okay, I'm sorry. My guess is that you have absolutely no sympathy for me calling playing golf for 3 days in Europe a working vacation. Okay. Oh boy, did we miss you in Prague. What a fabulous city. And I'm happy to announce that we played some world-class golf courses. Breathtaking views. Great. Pull every club out of your bag. You'll hear more about it next week, but thank you again to Artist 3000 and Paul Winskill for being such phenomenal hosts. As great as Prague is for a tourist who loves to walk a lot in a city, the best part of the adventure was the Golf Smarter listeners who joined us. You'll get a chance to meet some of these characters next week as we feature a group conversation with the course manager of Golf Park Pilsen. But as advertised, the trip featured golf, touring, and beer, and that's why we recorded the conversation at a brewery. Hopefully by next week, I'll also have my video diary of the adventure uploaded to Golf Smarter TV. But this week, we're moving forward to our next event that's happening here in California on Columbus Day, Monday, October 12th. It's the day after the President's Cup in San Francisco. They have opening for 24 players, so I encourage you to sign up early. Deadline is October 5th. This is a unique golf outing because it's not a competition. Just a fun round of golf with members of our phenomenal Golf Smarter community. And after the golf, we're going to have a barbecue and another group recording session of episode number 200 where you get to ask the questions of Jesse Ortiz. Now, before we play golf, we're going to give away three prizes that will be for nine different golfers. Third prize, or what I like to call the booby prize, is that you get to be in my foursome. First prize is an afternoon of heaven for golf equipment junkies. Three of you will be selected to be in the foursome with the COO and chief club designer of Bobby Jones Golf, the legendary Jesse Ortiz.
Hi, this is Jesse Ortiz of the Bobby Jones Golf Company, inviting you to sign up at golfsmarter.com to join me in a round of golf on Monday, October 12th, Columbus Day, the day after the President's Cup at Harding Park, for a round of golf at Peacock Gap in Marin County. We're going to have product demonstrations out there at the driving range. You can hit the entire family of Bobby Jones Golf products. And three lucky winners are going to have a chance to play with me. There'll be a barbecue and a recording session of Golf Smarter podcast after the round of golf. There'll also be audience Q&A, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have about the industry, club design, or just golf in general. Space is limited, so make sure you sign up early at golfsmarter.com.
But there's more. Second prize is also a phenomenal offer for any golfer. And that brings us to today's featured guest. Adam Eisner is the head teaching professional at Peacock Gap Country Club, where our October 12th barbecue pars and podcast party is being held. Adam is the second prize before the round begins. Three players will get 18 holes of a teaching lesson with Adam. So I wanted you to have a chance to meet Adam, hear some of his philosophies on teaching, and how he became a PGA teaching professional. This conversation was recorded on video next to the driving range at Peacock Gap. It's probably the best practice facility in Marin County, which is part of why I selected this course for the event, because now we have the Bobby Jones Golf Company out there for you to test their line of clubs. Anyway, I'll tell you about how to see the best part of this video after the interview. And so let's just say welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Adam.
Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here because you're adding a special feature to our event on October 12th. We've talked about this a lot on the show. We've got the President's Cup in San Francisco, and people are coming in from all over. So we wanted to have a party the following day and just go out and play golf, not a competition. And it's worked out even better not being a competition since we've added you as one of the features. You're going to be playing golf with three listeners. We're going to draw some names before the round of golf, and they're going to get an opportunity to play golf with you. But it's not just going to be a round of golf with a golfing professional. It's going to be a playing lesson with you. What I wanted to ask you about is the value of when you're working with a golf, your own teacher, your own golf professional, the difference between going out of the driving range and going out on the course with them.
I find the main difference on the driving range, obviously we were working on the swing itself and some mechanics and maybe trying to improve the swing. I'd say when I go out with people on the golf course, I give more help and advice for the short game, because the short game is the easiest part of the game to make mistakes on, and usually the mistakes are made by club selection and by the way they're trying to execute the shot. On the driving range, we're just working on basic mechanics and just trying to improve the swing so they can get better shots. But basically on the golf course, it's the short game that counts.
It's amazing how many people talk about being a scratch golfer on the driving range.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And how much it changes.
Well, it's a short game that really makes you score though. And I say most people miss at their score on the short game. For some reason or other, people think that without a good long game, the short game doesn't make any difference, but it's really the other way around. Without a good short game, the long game doesn't really make any difference.
Well, I heard a great story once of Ben Hogan, who played a shot. He went 9-iron driver on mm-hmm. one hole.
I've heard that story as well.
Yeah, and it's all about playing golf smarter, really. It's your strategy. Mm-hmm. And when you're going out with somebody, you can see how they play their strategy. And I'm sure that for a lot of recreational golfers, they completely miss that point of how to play strategically on a golf course.
Strategically, that's correct. I'd find a lot of people, alignment is a big issue on the golf course. Surprising how many people actually play a good shot. And it turns out to be a bad shot just down to the alignment. And I'd find that's one of the most important things on the golf course. Also, if you speak to a lot of professionals, I remember seeing on the television a few years ago, they were speaking to the tour pros and they were saying, what's put into one word or one sentence, what's the most important part of the game to them? And they all say the setup. Really? I would say out of the probably 30 guys, they just quickly filmed everyone with a 2-second interview with each one and they just mixed it all together. I'd say 60% of them said setup, which is correct if you don't set up correctly.
PGA, position, grip, alignment.
Something like that.
So when you say, let's get more specific about that. When you're talking about the alignment, you're talking about body alignment to the direction of the shot you want to make?
Well, maybe they're looking where they want to go, but their body's pointing in another direction, which will encourage a sort of a figure of eight shape. And they always swing in the direction they're looking, but if their body's pointing in the wrong direction, it usually is a bad execution of the shot. And they think they did everything right, like they did on the driving range, but it just doesn't work out that way. On the driving range, it's very easy to set up. There's usually marker posts on the floor. Everything's fairly square and a box down a fairly box-shaped driving range, and it's easy to set up. But as soon as you get onto the golf course with curves and trees and sloping fairways, they see everything with a slight optical illusion then.
Yeah. And would you set a figure eight shape?
Or if they aim maybe down, they're looking down the left-hand side of the fairway and they aim slightly to the right, they'll swing with their body shape in a different direction to where they're aiming. So even though they think they're swinging everything correctly, it turns out completely different to how they were doing it maybe 10 minutes before on the driving range. And if they just had that correct setup, which they did obviously a lot easier on the driving range, they'd have a lot better execution of their tee shots and their second shots to the green.
Interesting. So what other things is it that you see, the short game, obviously, you talked about already, but what other things can you discover? And you don't need full 18 holes to really see the value from playing with a professional.
No, you can use my usual playing lessons between 3, 4, 5 holes. You can basically see straight away after one hole what the person's doing, the way he approaches the game, and his mindset towards the game. You can see that very quickly.
Interesting. So the fact that you're going to get to play with three different listeners, you'll be able to spend a considerable amount of time with each one.
Oh, it's a lot of time, yeah. For 18 holes, we can discuss every aspect of the game. And obviously, they'll see with the way I approach them with the short game shots, they can learn themselves that way. And as I show one of the listeners how to play a shot, obviously the other guy is going to see that same shot, and he can learn from that as well.
And that's a really valuable lesson, because it's generally more than an hour long, and you're more working on more than one thing. Obviously, you know, as you said, you're working on the driving range, you're working on just swing mechanics. But here, it's when the whole game comes together when you're out on the golf course, and most people don't even think about taking a lesson like that.
Yeah, the management on the golf course is really important. It's amazing how many people want to take out on the golf course for the first time as a playing lesson, how much benefit they really gain for that. I think they gain a lot more than they really think they do, or they were expecting. Because on the driving range, it's non-stop ball after the ball, and they think that's the money more well spent than it is maybe hitting 10 shots on the golf course over three or four holes. But they're always very happy about the way the golf lesson goes on the golf course.
Great. Oh, this is really going to be fun, and I wish, you know, make sure that you guys sign up early, because you're going to want to get the opportunity to not only play with Adam, but we're also going to have Jesse Ortiz coming out. Mm-hmm. And if you want to, you know, spend your time working with one of the legendary club makers of our time, Jesse Ortiz will be here. Bobby Jones Golf will be set out on the driving range that you're looking at, and they'll have the full line of their clubs, drivers, hybrids, fairway woods, and the Dave Pell's wedges. You'll get a chance to hit them. On the driving range behind you, this is a new driving range. Peacock Gap is really it's not a new course, but it's totally renovated. We talked to Forrest Richardson, who is the architect here. It's a very different golf course. And this course versus the old Peacock Gap strategy comes into play a lot on this golf course.
A lot more so now, because with the bunkers are a lot more strategic and the greens are a lot harder to play. The greens before were pretty flat, probably one of the most flattest greens you'll ever see, and now it's gone to the other extreme, where you have some very tricky greens out there, which have to be played once to be appreciated.
As a local, this was one of the... I started playing on the 9-hole course here in San Rafael up at McGinnis, but this was the course, the 18-hole course, that I really cut my teeth on, and there used to be a joke that everyone was saying that the tee boxes are undulated and the greens were flat.
Well, not anymore.
Not anymore. No, we got some pretty interesting greens on this. Some of them are comical in some ways, and some very frustrating. And I've seen a lot of players on this course very upset with some of the greens on this golf course. But, you know, that's where the scoring is. There's a lot of three-putt opportunities on these greens.
You got to be on the right side of the hole.
You got to be on the right side of the hole. Well, sometimes you can't even see the approach shot, though. You know, like there's the one hole back there on the front nine.
The seventh hole.
Yeah.
The seventh hole's got a tricky green.
So you've got to check it as you're playing five and six. You've got to take a peek.
Well, you can see we've got pin positions every day, so you can see if it's on left center or the right of the green.
That's true.
And you only should be, an average golfer shouldn't be hitting no more than an 8-iron into that green.
Yeah.
So it's fair in one way.
What's the most common mistake that you see from recreational golfers out here? Is it playing the wrong tee boxes? Is it playing the wrong clubs off the tee box? What do you see regularly that they're making a common mistake that if they understood their management, course management a little more, they'd correct?
Underclubbing. Simple as that. I've seen that ever since I was first teaching. Everybody plays their shot, that everything works perfectly. They'll hit the green. And 9 times out of 10, you don't hit the ball perfectly exactly how you want it, and they come up short.
That's an interesting point, because I know there are plenty of times where I think, all right, this is a 5-iron shot for me, but I've not been hitting the ball well. There's a wind coming in my face, and if I just nail it and you know, put everything I have into it, I'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
But I shouldn't be thinking that way.
Not really. I remember I had an interview. Well, not myself personally, but I was listening to an interview with Bernard Langer. And going back a few years ago when this interview was taking place, he was without doubt the finest iron player in the world. And then someone asked him, how many shots do you hit on the golf course exactly how you envisage playing them? And he said, about 3. And this is the guy who's hitting the most fairways, the most greens. Mm. So the actual chance of hitting the shot exactly how you want to is pretty low. And I think that's exactly the same for the amateurs. The amount of times people come up short or on a par 3, they just scrape onto the front edge of the green when the flag's at the back and they're straight under pressure. It's almost like a shot penalty. if you've got a long way to go just because they had the wrong club selection.
Plus, many times you're thinking, you know, you're looking at the distance. If you're not using a GPS, you're just looking at a scorecard or something, and it says that it's 145 yards. That's to the center of the green.
It's always to the center of the green, yes.
So you've got to really check out what your pin placement is for the day and adjust accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people just forget about that.
They
and
don't.
Again,
they just look
and
at
then
the
they're
car.
Trying to hit the perfect shot, and they're coming up short. Let's talk a little bit about your history, how you got, because you're not a local.
No, I'm English.
I can obviously tell you're not a local here. How did you get to Peacock Gap?
Well, it's a long story to get all the way here, but to put it into one word, a lady.
That single word.
So that makes a very long story, very short, and I'm sure most of the listeners will understand
yes.
how that happened. She didn't want to come over to Europe, so it was a decision I had to make, come over here or call it a day.
Well, so I hope it worked out well, and I hope that's the ring that's on your finger.
Yeah, 3 years, a couple of days ago.
Oh, congratulations. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Then let's talk about your history in golf and where you've been and how you came to be the head teaching professional here at Peacock Gap.
I started playing golf when I was 12, just because I saw Seve Ballesteros win the 1979 British Open, or the Open, at Royal Lytham. And I saw him play 4 days of golf, win £15,000, and I thought, I'll do that. That's as naive as I was at the start. And I turned professional when I think I was about 20. And I went through the PGA system. I tried to play a little bit on the tour, some tour events. I got invited to a few tour events. And then I went to Germany because I wanted to earn some money teaching golf during the summertime, as they only had a summer season where I went in southern Germany. And I played the South American tour a couple of times. And I stayed in Germany for 18 years.
Did you really?
And then I did
what
one
part
year,
of Germany?
I was in the southern part near Munich.
That's actually, there's some conversation going that maybe we'll be having another Golf Smarter adventure. We just finished Prague. We just came back from Prague a few days ago. And one of the listeners that was there was from Germany, and he really wants us to come out there because in the southern part, he says there's some great golf courses.
There are some nice golf courses there. If you're in the southern part, you can always go to the northern part of Austria as well. They've got some nice courses in the mountains there as well. There are some nice courses around there.
Yeah. There's lots of places I want to go play golf, so that's going to be on the list. We've got to figure out how to do that. And you played on which tour? On the European tour?
No, I was invited. I had a few invites. I never actually played, per se, on the European tour. I had a few invites. I played in the Czech Open, as you mentioned, the Czech. I played in the Czech Open a couple of times. Actually, I played one at Karlstein, and I played one at Marienbad. I had two invites to play there.
Now, Karlstein, was it 3 9-hole courses when you were there? Because that's what it is now. It's 3 9-hole courses.
No, it was just 18 holes when I played.
So it was number one and number two. That's what we played. That's a tough walk.
All I can remember, the first hole was a par 5 dogleg. That's about the only hole I can remember on the golf course.
Yep, it is. That was, and every turn that you take, there's this huge castle staring at you in this mountain behind you. It's enormous, and it's breathtaking.
I mean, when I played there in the Czech Open, I played with Ivan Lendl.
Did you really?
He had an invite.
He was in your group?
He was in my group.
Yeah. So what's competing on that level with somebody who's that good? Or was he that good?
Well, I think he was a scratch golfer. Maybe he was about a one handicap golfer.
We're talking about a tennis player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was number one. Well, he was retired at the time. He's probably, when I played it, he was probably 6 or 7 years out of his tennis career. No, I can just remember people always teasing him a little bit, saying 6'4", 6'4", 7'5", may be good on the tennis course, but it's no good here. I can just remember that being cracked, and then someone said that, and I thought that was pretty good.
Very good.
I can't remember what he shot. He shot something like 78, 74, if I can remember, roughly about that sort of score. But he was good. He's a left-hander. He hit the shots well.
Well. Once
player.
An athlete, I guess.
It was fun to play in that.
Although when you look at Charles Barkley, you'd think, you know, once an athlete, always an athlete. No, not necessarily so.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily so. When I've played with and have opportunities to play with professional athletes a couple of times, and the thing that always amazed me about them is the mental game. And I would ask them about the mental approach to golf, mm-hmm. and they would look at me like they didn't know what I was talking about, thinking that when you're a professional athlete, failure is not in your vocabulary. So you're always going for it. There's just no opportunity for failure. Where we talk a lot about on Golf Smarter, in the mental game of playing smart, of not, you know, not making, you know, knowing that mistakes can always happen. I mean, golf is just a series of mistakes that can happen to everybody. Is that the difference at that level when you're competing on a level with scratch golfers? Just everyone's going for it all the time? Have you found that?
I remember the first couple of times I played some top professional events, how often they actually went for it when I was pretty conservative. To play with the big boys, you got to go for it all the time.
Very aggressive.
Always aggressive. Amazingly aggressive. Even for some shots, which really, if you don't pull it off, you're going to be out of bounds. They're still going for it, which really surprised me, to be honest. The difference, that leap from top amateur events to professional events. You have to go for the shots.
And then the fact to do it consistently, 4 days in a row of playing at your peak level.
It's difficult.
It amazes me how they do that.
There's not many guys that can do it.
Clearly.
There's only 120 on the tour, really, to maintain their card. And the rest are struggling around to trying to get back the next year. So there's not many guys that can do it.
So how do we convince the recreational golfer that the way they're playing is okay? Not to beat themselves up, not to get angry, not to be throwing clubs, and just to stay within themselves.
There's got to be a lot of positive thinking. I think there's so much negative thinking on the golf course. Everything that they're trying to avoid, instead of just simply thinking what they want to do. How many times I ask people, what are you thinking I'm doing on this putt? And they say, well, not leaving it short. Instead of just thinking about what they want to do, or hitting it off one hole, don't knock it down the right. Instead of just concentrating simply on where you want to do it, they're thinking about exactly what they don't want to do. That's what I think the major problem with the mental side of golf is with amateur golf.
That cracks me up, because when you said, don't hit it down the right, to me, the last few words I heard was, hit it down the right. And that's what they're saying to themselves, don't hit it down the right. Don't hit it down the right. And that's what they end up doing. It's like, that's what I didn't want to do. So they're actually putting the wrong thought in their head.
Happens all the time.
Every time. The other part that seems to be really difficult, and I just received an email from a listener the other day who talks about some days his play off the tee with the driver is great, but his iron play is completely off. Other days, he's got his iron play is spot on, and he can't get the ball to go right down the fairway off with his driver. And he wanted to know what he can do to get those two together, to be consistent with those two. You're laughing because that is what golf is about.
I'm laughing because I can remember when I was a kid and was about, I don't know, probably about 10 handicap, I used to go to my professional and say exactly the same thing to me. I used to say, the tee shot's great, and all my iron shots were terrible, and the next day it used to be the opposite. I used to go to my pro and ask him that exact same question, and he used to laugh at me and say, well, it's just the way it is. As you get better, those two things will start coming closer together until one day you won't notice any difference between the two. And that's true. But you need to play a lot of golf to get that difference down so you don't really make any difference which one you're hitting. All the time.
So your answer is patience?
It's patience.
Answer that he wanted.
Sometimes it's just the way it is. There's no simple answer. There's a lot of, you can just make up an answer, which probably isn't true, but sometimes you just got to accept it. Some days you hit good tee shots and some days you hit good iron shots. Unless you get a really prepare to work on your swing with a professional, see if there's a fundamental flaw, and every day every swing looks a little bit different. And some days you may swing and the irons will forgive that mistake, and the next day the woods will forgive that mistake.
So it's just a rare day that it all comes together.
Maybe in this particular person's case, yes. But it sounds like he's got some fundamental flaws in his swing. If one day the irons are good and the next day the woods are good, it's obviously not the same swing.
So really, without looking at him, there's nothing that you can advise as far as off-season tips, because winter's going to be coming up for a lot of people.
I'd advise him just have a quick 30-minute lesson with his local professional and put that question to him and see if there's any what he can fix on that account.
I've also noticed that a lot of people, after the second hole, they're beating themselves up. They're like, I can't get off the tee today. You've only played two holes, right?
Yes, I hear that a lot. It used to make me laugh a lot when I play with people. They played the first two shots and they say, today's not my day. They've already committed to a bad round. And I always say the same. Well, just keep going. We'll start again. Just start afresh. Make the next 17 holes good holes. But it's surprising. People are always looking for the negative.
Why do we do that?
You know, I don't know. It's a good question, but human nature, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's difficult to be positive permanently.
Especially in a game that is just a series of mistakes.
You just got to have less mistakes than you did the day before.
You know, like that's life, it's just a series of disasters that you have to correct. I mean, isn't that what golf's all about? I was trying to explain to someone recently that, you know, they were saying, well, people think that, you know, they compare golf to life. And I was like, yeah, I can understand that, because it's just a series of disasters that you have to correct. And what you want to see when you're on the golf course with somebody is how they handle themselves in those situations.
So one of the things I do when I teach people, I always try to explain that I'm trying to eliminate their poor shots, not trying to make their best shot better. And my best shot from 150 yards is exactly the same as Tiger Woods' best shot from 150 yards. Just by definition, if I hit a great shot from 150 yards, I'm going to be within a couple of yards. So is he. But if I hit it slightly off, I'm going to be 15, 20 yards away, and he's still going to be 3 or 4 yards away. Yeah. And that's the difference between the two of us. It's not how good my good shot is. Obviously, he can hit his good shot a lot more often than I can, but it's when I hit a bad shot, it's really bad. And when he has a bad shot, it's not really that bad at all. So all we're trying to do in a general lesson in the driving range is trying to eliminate the bad shots or get them less. Instead of hitting 10 bad shots around, hit 5 bad shots around, and they'll improve your score a lot more than hitting 1 or 2 more perfect shots.
Yeah, what you were just saying made me think of the 18th hole of the 2009 PGA Championship, mm-hmm. when it was Tiger and Wai Yang on the 18th hole, the approach mm-hmm. shot, where Yang had to make it over, made that amazing shot mm-hmm. over the tree and just stuck it right there at the pin. And Tiger's shot, now the pin was on the left side of the green, and Tiger's shot just missed the green by a foot or two mm-hmm. and ended up in the deep rough right there. But it was a great shot. I mean, he didn't miss by much. It wasn't like a Phil Mickelson miss, where when Mickelson misses, he misses. You know, he can miss big. But Tiger was right there, and it's like he didn't choke. You know,
no, he didn't.
He just missed it, but he was going for it. He knew what he had to do.
Yeah, the guy played well. His low score of the day. Yeah. He shot the low score of the day.
Yeah, that was a great one.
Difficult to beat.
That was an exciting round of golf.
It was good. It was fun. It's one of the best shots I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. Head-to-head, too. And Yang just didn't get phased.
It was a good last shot.
Tiger brings something to a round of golf that everyone seems to notice, but I don't know if everybody's felt, but it's just this intimidation factor. Even on that level, other players know where he is, know what he's doing.
He doesn't make any mistakes. That's why he was such a good amateur player. He hit a lot of greens. And as you're playing match play, you're always hoping a partner will miss the green so you get an easy win. And he hits basically almost every single green. And that's really heartbreaking, because you don't see where you're going to catch him or overtake him. And that's what's happening on the tour. I think he's the guy who hits the most greens in regulation. And he's a great putter. So it's pretty difficult to beat him. Yeah. Everyone else knows that. He hits the most greens and he's the best putter.
And putting is where your scoring is going to be done, as long as you're getting on. Mm-hmm. And that's why they give you 2 strokes on the scorecard on every hole to start. And that's where you're going to eliminate your mistakes. You know, if you can practice your putting. What kind of putting advice do you like to give? What kind of practice tips do you give on putting?
I really like to think about the mental side. We briefly touched on it before about what to think about when people are putting. And so many times I hear when I'm playing with a group of three customers or 3 friends, and they miss a putt, and they say afterwards, oh, I knew I was going to miss that on the right. It just makes me laugh. If you know you're going to miss it on the right, why didn't you do something about it beforehand? All they were doing is thinking about something, or they're standing on top of the putt and thinking, well, is this putt straight, a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right? So they think about 3 different directions. Obviously, one's going to be correct. It's going to be straight. It's going to break to the right, or it's going to break to the left. But they don't make a decision. That's what I find is the difference between an amateur and a professional. A professional makes a complete, committed decision of where he's going to hit the ball. An amateur just hits it generally in the direction he thinks it should be, with no commitment.
So once you step over the ball, you should be totally committed to the ball going in the hole.
Correct. 100% sure. And that's why pros never worry about the second putt, because they're always convinced the first putt's going to go in. Mm-hmm. And if the first one doesn't go in, they're convinced the second putt's going to go in.
Right.
So they're never worried about where the ball finishes up if it doesn't go in the hole.
Interesting. How do we clear our mind? How do we commit to a shot and then... Because I play with so many people that seem to stand over the ball, whether they're putting or they're striking the ball on a full swing. They stand over the ball for a long time and think about it for a long time. And you could just see that they're moving little bits and pieces of their body. You know,
I find if they're thinking about it for a long time, they're thinking about everything they don't want to do. just to think about what you actually want to do is fairly simple. It's a one decision option. You want to hit the green, or you want to hit it short of the green, or a particular position off the tee. But people are thinking about, well, don't knock it down the left. Well, what did I do at the last hole? And the last hole, I knocked it to the right. All negative thoughts about what they don't want to do. Obviously thinking about something of the freezing over the ball. If they cleared their mind, they just made the decision of what they want to do. They got a lot better chance of executing it.
Do you think that there's a lot of value in a very consistent pre-shot routine?
Yep, of course. We touched on that about the correct setup. If you can get the correct setup every time, aim where you want to aim, there's a lot of value to that. I'd say that is pretty overlooked by a lot of amateur golfers when on the golf course. They're more worried about the mechanics of the swing rather than where they're aiming and rather than making a decision about what they actually want to do.
Just got to forget about your mechanics. Just go with
what you
got. On
the golf course, you got to trust yourself on your golf course.
Yeah.
And you have to have it that way.
Tell me about your pre-shot routine.
I suppose it's like a lot of pros. All I think about, if I've got an 8-iron in my hand, I just envision myself hitting the best 8-iron I've ever hit. And that's the thought I've got in my mind when I'm going up to the ball. I just envision myself hitting it perfectly. And if I want it, hit it, land it next to the hole, that's how I'm envisioning it. I just envisioned exactly what I want to do.
But walk me through how you, from the time it's your turn to hit, mm-hmm. to striking the ball, take me through your routine. Tell me what you do.
I get my distance, which is obviously fairly easy to do nowadays with markers everywhere or GPS systems. I make my distance. I can choose my club very quickly. I just align. I take an in-between point, maybe 12 inches in front of my ball. I set my club face to my ball and this 12-inch point in front of my ball, set square to that. I have a clear thought in my mind that I'm going to hit this line perfectly and it's going to go next to the hole. Simple, clear thoughts, and that's how I execute the shot. I think about, just very simple things, and not worrying about what happens if.
Do you have a post-shot routine?
No, I don't think so. I just take my glove off, so I don't. It's basically all I do. That's
move on.
That's more there.
On to the next one.
I just take my glove off and walk on to the next shot. But then the only time I get annoyed about a shot is if I didn't really commit to it. Or I was on the shot and saying, well, should I be really hitting a 7-iron instead of a 6-iron? And I go through with the shot and I hit a bad shot. And I know afterwards I didn't really commit to the shot. That's annoying. It's a little bit lazy, I suppose, as well. Because you've got to commit to the shot.
I want to touch about something you just said, and that's about when you're annoyed with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How does that manifest itself? What do you do, and how do you get out of that?
It's just a short memory. I'm just short. Internally, we wouldn't really notice it externally, apart from maybe biting my lip. But it's only 10 seconds, if that, 5 seconds worth of internal annoyance, but that's only if I don't commit to the shot. I mean, I know I'm not going to hit every shot exactly how I want to. If I pull a shot to the left or push it to the right, I'm not really annoyed about that. I'm just annoyed if I'm second-guessing myself. Suddenly, at the last moment, I'm about to hit the shot, and I think about something, well, don't leave it short.
I want to talk about one more thing here, and we talked about it briefly. I think what we may do is move a little bit, but let's talk about it first, and we'll take the camera down. Mm-hmm. To the pitching area over there, and we frequently talk about 100 yards and in. Mm-hmm. And you talked about the short game is what really makes it. Mm-hmm. And to me, I see more frustration. I feel more frustration. I get angry with myself more often than not. And I've tried really hard to teach myself not to get angry with shots, but I find that I have more frustration, more anger on 10 yards and in.
Mm-hmm.
When I come up short of the green, and my ball's in a rough around the green, and I'm taking a wedge shot, and I just chunk that shot. That's where I, you know, it's like, oh, this is the shot I should be making.
Mm-hmm.
But it probably is one of the more difficult shots to make, isn't it?
I wouldn't say it's one of the more difficult shots. I'd say it's one of the easy shots to mess up.
Okay, point well taken.
I'd actually say it's one of the easy shots in golf. That's why the pros make it look so easy, because it is easy. It's easy to mess up, but if you have the right club selection, I'd say it's down to club selection. A lot of people choose the wrong club.
Really?
I see people trying to hit the ball too high all the time. They think the pros always try and hit the ball high and get spin on the ball, which they really don't. Not from 10 yards and in.
Yeah.
Now, from 10 yards and in, you want to get it to roll as long as possible, right? And you want to hit the ball as low as possible. That's always the secret in short game. Hit the ball as low as possible. That's why you hit the ball with a putter on the green, because it goes nice and low.
Right.
You don't see anyone chipping with a 3-iron just because the putt's a long putt.
But it's a very different shot when you're, say, 5 or 6 yards off the green in a deep grass, and the flag is close, is up front, is close to you, versus the pin being all the way in the back of the green. Those are two very different shots, aren't they?
Well, we can have a look today. When we go down there, we'll hit a few shots. But you are also mentioning a shot doesn't really happen that often. 5 yards from the green, flag behind the bunker and in deep grass. Sometimes you've got to take your medicine, know you're in a bad position, and just try and get on the green anywhere instead of trying to hit a miracle shot over the bunker.
All right, so I think what we'll do is we'll go down to the practice putting area, and it will create a whole separate video on just playing from 10 yards and in. But I just want to say once again how excited I am that you're going to be joining us. And now that that the listeners have had a chance to hear you talk, how exciting it's going to be for them to come out and play with us here at Peacock Gap on October 12th and get a chance to, if they don't get a chance to play with Jesse Ortiz, they may get the chance to play with you. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you so much for offering that service, and it's just going to be a blast.
All right, thank you.
As I mentioned, I really believe that Peacock Gap now features the best practice facility in our county, Marin County, California, just on the other side of the Golden Gate Bridge. Not only do they have a full grass driving range, no mats, but they have a huge putting area and a chipping area with lots of rough and a good-sized sand bunker. So after this conversation was recorded, we went down to the area with a thick rough and shot a short video tip that can be found at golfsmarter.com on Golf Smarter TV. For me, the most frustrating additional strokes are added to my score within 20 yards of the green. I don't know about you, but how many times, I don't even want to tell you how many times, where I just come up short of the green, and so I got to chip the shot on, and I either doink it or scull it or smack it across to the other side. Just so many opportunities. It's so frustrating. And I'm sure, like me, you've seen not only clubs thrown, but swearing thrown out when golfers screw up their shots from close in. So check out this free advice provided by Adam on how to get close to the pin when you come up short of the green. It's really a good little video tip, and it's right there at Golf Smarter TV. Now, if you access Golf Smarter on a mobile device, like an iPhone or an iPod, Windows Media, Android phone, or a Palm Pre, and you have access to YouTube, you can't on golfsmarter.com on your mobile device, you won't be able to get because you can't see Flash. I'm going on too long about, the details of this, but if you can get to YouTube on your mobile device, search for Golf Smarter TV there. We're at youtube.com/golfsmartertv, and you can see Adam's video. It's called Golf Smarter TV-Short Shot Onto Green. Check that one out. It's really good, and you can see Adam at work there. Please make sure to sign up for the Barbecue Pars and Podcast Party before October 5th. That's supposedly our deadline for the October 12th event. I need to tell the golf course. There's a special price for members, and I would really like to meet you there. So come on, if you live in California, really very little excuse on why you can't show up for a day of golf, because it is on a holiday. Monday, October 12th, is a holiday. So I want to see you there. Only 24 spaces are open to play. Each player will get access to the driving range where Bobby Jones Golf will have their demo tent set up for you to try out their full line of clubs. You'll also receive a sleeve of Dixon Earth golf balls with the Golf Smarter logo, a chance to win a round with either Jesse Ortiz, Adam Eisner, or myself, a barbecue after the round, and then we'll record episode number 200 with Jesse answering my questions, and even better, answering your questions. The recording session's open to the public, so as one of the players, you'll get a reserve seat up front. If you can't play, but you still can come out afterwards, we'll be recording about 5:30. Come on by, check out the line of clubs, and hang out for the recording session. Hey, I just received, while I was in Prague, I received press credentials for the President's Cup. This will be my first professional golf event, and I'll be Twittering my thoughts and updates during the day. You can follow me on Twitter at Fred Green. That's Green with an E. And, of course, if my mobile device doesn't have a signal, you're not going to see anything from me, so don't watch too closely. Congratulations to Joe Pillow of New Bern, North Carolina. Joe's our winner of a Tour Tempo Micro Player. We still have a few of these Tour Tempo Micro Players available at the members-only price of $69.95. Anywhere else you shop for this effective training aid, you'll have to pay $99.95. But when you order it on our Golfers Mart and enter the coupon code TTMP001, you, as a Golf Smarter member, will receive a 30% discount, only $69.95. Again, TTMP is the coupon code. I can't publish it, so memorize it as I say it. TTMP001. While we're in Prague, one of the players said to me, TTMP001. I guess it's working. For many of you who have purchased the Tour Tempo, the Micro Player, please email me with an update on how it's working for you so far. While we were in Prague, one of the players videoed my swing with his iPhone, the 3GS, and we played it back frame by frame, and sure enough, hey, I was at a 3-to-1 tempo, and it's been ingrained into me with the work I've done with my Micro Player. So I have to admit, this puppy really works. Yeah, I'm at 3-to-1, but my golf swing has also improved dramatically. I was at a charity event yesterday, and we were only allowed to use 2 drives from each player in our foursome, and I think we used like 9 of mine because I was driving the ball so well because in my head, I'm playing that rhythm on my Tour Tempo Micro Player. So anyway, this private event I played at yesterday, beautiful day at the private Meadow Club up on the mountains in Marin County. We had a lot of fun, and I was the MC of the charity auction and was able to help them raise a lot of money at the auction. So I really enjoyed that as well. And at this event, there was a tribute to a member of our community, and someone provided me a great quote that I'd like to close with today. Why is it that the guy with the fastest golf cart always has the best lie? I thought it was funny. Next week, you'll get a chance to meet some of the cast of characters who join us on our Golf Smarter adventure to Prague as we interviewed Graham Scheel, course manager of Golf Park Pilsen, while at the restaurant of the Pilsner Urquell Brewery. Awesome. If you have any questions, comments, requests, or quotes, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.